Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Be Bold America. I'm your host, Jill Cody. And to my joy, Dr. Pettus Perry is back with us to discuss today's essential and significant topic, living a committed life. How are you doing, Pettus? We've missed you.
Jill, I am doing very, very, very well, and I'm so excited to talk about today's topic.
Pettus, we're having some audio trouble that Eliza is trying to fix right now. Also, just to let you know, our interview guest has not called in as she promised at 4:55, and Eliza's also trying to reach her, so we may be talking for a little while till we can connect with our guest, Lynn Twist. Eliza's going to try to reconnect with Pettus because of that audio problem. I was, you know, reviewing this past year's Be Bold America's podcast statistics, and I learned that 78% of our listeners are in the United States. That's to be expected, that the majority of our listeners would be in the United States. But I also learned that we are heard in countries such as Lithuania, Germany, United Arab Emirates, Brazil, Iran, France, and Algeria. It's totally amazing. I will also try to introduce our topic while we're getting Pettus on the line. And our program today is Living a Committed Life. How does one person make a difference in the world? People constantly seek to discover meaning in their lives, but as humans take on the challenges facing us in this decade and beyond, we're searching for it more than ever. A committed life demonstrates the power of dedication that goes beyond the self and teaches how to live a committed life that enables you to draw on resources and capacities for your most authentic self. In five parts, Lynn Twist, who the author of Living a Committed Life, says that to have commitments, you need to be engaged as an individual and in collective action and discover ways to connect and collaborate to make a difference. So I'm hoping we will be able to connect with Lynn soon, too. We've texted her and called, and she had confirmed, so we're a little bit flummoxed here while Lynn isn't on the line. But is Pettus on now? Oh, dear, this is lots of fun. This is so much fun. Anyway, I'm going to talk a little bit more about Lynn, hoping that she will be calling in soon. She is a best-selling author of The Soul of Money and founder of the Soul of Money Institute. And her new book, as I've talked about, is called Living a Committed Life. She's a recognized global visionary committed to alleviating poverty. Her experience, her breadth and scope of work is vast, ranging from working with Mother Teresa in Calcutta, to working with Ethiopian refugee women, to fighting for the threatened rainforest in the Amazon. And she also has shared the stage with some of today's most influential thought leaders, including Oprah Winfrey, Marianne Williamson, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Stephen Covey, one of my favorites, Deepak Chopra, Jane Goodall, Jack Canfield, and many more. One of the quotes that she opened her book with, which I really liked, considering the name of this show is Be Bold America, she had a quote in the introduction by William Hutchinson Murray that says, "Whatever you can do or dream you can, begin it. Boldness has a genius, power, and magic in it." And I could not agree more. You know, being bold, Be Bold America requires genius, power, and magic, because each one of us needs to make a difference. And do we have somebody?
Let's see if he's on.
Pettus, are you there?
I am.
Oh,
is this any better?
Thank you. And you come across very clearly. I'd like to update you in that we still don't have our guest online.
And are you kidding?
It's very concerning because the interview was confirmed just yesterday. Friday. It was confirmed on Friday. And I've already done the part that you would do, which was introducing the topic, and also I've done the part I was going to do of introducing her, but it may be for naught if she doesn't show up. But let's start again, and just wanted to say that I am so glad that you're with us for this show, and hoping that she'll call in soon or remember that she had an interview. So, Pettis, we've missed you. So what's been going on?
Well, I think you may be aware that lots of significant changes have happened in my life. I am no longer teaching full time, and I've decided to take another direction in consulting organizations. I'm an organizational effectiveness consultant, and I've decided to do that full time. I've been consulting almost as long as I've been working, but I think the time has come in my life for me to make a switch, and that's really why I was so excited to talk about Lynn today, because her book really resonated with me as I went through it, and her life, or at least the story she tells, is a story that mirrors my own experiences. So I wanted to congratulate her because she certainly did tell my story as a part of her story.
Well, the full title of her book is Living a Committed Life, Finding Freedom and Fulfillment in a Purpose Larger Than Yourself. And, you know, you were saying to me earlier that when you made that decision to go into consulting, you felt that things were just coming to you net, like in flow, right? Just flowing.
Oh, that's exactly right. It was a very strange thing that happened. I made the decision, and within that week, within a few days, people started reaching out to me for a variety of reasons, and many of those contacts have now led to me doing more business. And it wasn't something that I had begun yet to go out and do. So as soon as I made the conscious choice that I was going to do this work, and as you know, Jill, the work that I do is to really try to produce kinder, gentler, more productive workspaces and communities. Things started opening up, and I had one contract that I've been working on since February, but I picked up a second contract that is, the value of it is going to be three times what the first one was. And I had no idea in February, when I stopped working full time, that today I would be moving in such a direction so quickly. So it really is, and this isn't the first time that that's happened to me. You know, my life in the nonprofit world was very much the same. I made life commitments to the work that I was doing, and things just would seem to open up. I would be able to go into environments that were failing, and within, you know, very short periods of time, it was like magic was happening, and that, you know, I was supposed to be there. And really good things happened in the places that I went. And the same thing happened when I made the commitment to go into education. And it happened very quickly. So it's amazing how the universe kind of conspires to help us do the things that we are really destined to do, or that we really want to do, you know, once we make that commitment. It's almost like a door opens up and things just, you know, begin to happen. And if a person hasn't experienced that, they may think that this is poppycock, but I promise you, over the course of my lifetime, that it's happened multiple times, and it certainly has happened within the last couple of months to put me in a position to do things that I've wanted to do for a couple of decades.
Well, one thing that I know Lynn wrote in her book was that most people want to wait and see how things are going before they make a commitment. But it doesn't work that way, does it? You have to have a leap of faith to make that.
Yeah.
Right? Didn't you experience that?
Absolutely. It is. When you are vacillating, it's almost like the universe doesn't know what to do, right? So things don't start happening. But once you have made the commitment, and this has to be a deep commitment, a soul commitment, things just start happening.
Mm-hmm.
They just start opening up. You know, my son played elite hockey, and I didn't have any idea, Jill, how I was going to pay for that.
Oh.
I wasn't making the kind of money that I needed to make for my son to play an elite sport. And we took a leap of faith, and it worked. Somehow things just kept happening so that he could keep doing the thing that he was really born to do, because when you saw him on the ice, it was like magic. And we made it work. There were just things that happened. People came to us. If I couldn't make a trip with my son, someone would say, hey, I'll take him, and would put him up in a hotel room if I couldn't afford to do it. So there's a lot of magic to be made if we can believe in the things that we're doing and not vacillate. Not vacillate. I was vacillating in this most recent scenario. I've been vacillating for probably a year. And I kept vacillating for another full 6 months before I actually took off and said, okay, I'm going to go on and do this. And the door started opening.
Well, this is a good time to take our break. This is KSQD, 90.7 FM, many voices, one station. Listen globally online from the KSQD website.
Join KSQD this evening for Reflections on Buddhism, a monthly conversation on bringing spiritual truths into everyday life. Have you ever felt ungrounded? The COVID pandemic, climate change, and other aspects of modern life have increased the frequency and depth of this feeling for many of us. Groundlessness can be profoundly uncomfortable, but can we remain open to seeing it as a gift with potential to help us grow? Join Tenzin Chokyi and Matthew Devaris to explore the theme of groundlessness and how to bring it into the spiritual path. That's this evening from 6 to 7 p.m. on 90.7 FM, K-Squid, many voices, one station.
We're back, and feeling ungrounded, I kind of identified with that promo, because our guest has not called in. And I think I'll be interviewing you, Pettis. Or we'll interview each other.
Surprise.
Yes, here's. But, you know, it's interesting that you used the word magic, because while we were getting you online, I shared a quote that Lynn had in the introduction of her book by William Hutchinson Murray. And he said, whatever you can do or dream you can, begin it. Boldness has a genius, power, and magic in it. And you used that word once you made that commitment to start your own consulting business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the only word I think that everybody can understand in some way that really, at least in my mind, describes what the process is, because it literally materializes out of thin air, or what appears to be thin air. Now, you know that I'm also involved with, you know, metaphysics and trying to understand, you know, how quantum spaces work. And I realize that everything that exists is connected. And there are things that we can experience through the means that we've developed individually, you know, as human beings. We have senses and all that. But there are things that we can't see or explain yet that just happen. And it's that process that I think, because of a lack of other way to describe it, is what causes me to use the word magic.
Well, and also, it might be good to define what you mean and maybe what Lynn means, by commitment. What does commitment mean in your mind?
Well, you know, we can verbalize commitment and we can actualize commitment. So I'm talking about something that it might be spoken, but it is also reflected in the behaviors of the person. So, for example, you might be committed to going swimming, but if that commitment does not include getting in the water, you'll never be able to go swimming.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. So there is that distinction. And it really is, it is what I think she described. If she didn't, it was what I interpreted from her reading, that it really is a soul commitment. And it has to be for the right reasons. Right?
Right.
We get to choose whether we're going to put our energy to destructive or constructive purposes. And people who actualize in both of those areas can make things happen, but it's the people who are doing it for the good of the whole, the collective, for each other. They move beyond themselves. This is not about greed. In fact, it's about selflessness, right? Where we're living a life that is in service to others, that is in service to nature, that is in service to the universe, and it's an unselfish, you know, service that happens, and we all have the capacity to do it. We just have to find our way. You know, for Lynn, it became raising money for causes that she believed in, and that's beautiful. You know, I think I shared with you one time, Jill, that I was the director of a statewide program, and we had $1 million endowment. And my job was to try to bring into the program people who could not afford to come into the program. And I was able to give literally $100,000 a year to people that could otherwise not do what I was doing, and it was so necessary. It was about democracy and teaching people democracy. So we were able to change the ethnic makeup of the organization by including people from communities who otherwise would not have participated solely because they couldn't afford to do so. So, you know, having that commitment and being creative in how we work to serve the world is what I think Lynn was talking about.
Well, I also remember her talking about in the book that commitment is an act of courage, integrity, and boldness. We already define boldness as magical and with power. But she talks about courage and integrity and boldness with commitment as well, because you do have to take that leap of faith, I think. I feel the same way with my experience. After I retired, I committed to writing books that were on issues, the twin issues of our day, you know, democracy and the climate crisis. And I committed those years in writing those two books. And the first one, you know, all of a sudden there was an offer to do a radio show. Here I am. It's been 4 years. I shared previously when we were trying to connect with you, but that, you know, the podcast now, you know, the 78% of our listeners are in the United States, which is expected. However, we are in many other countries, and the top one is Lithuania. This is an order of the stats. I found the page here. Lithuania, Germany, United Arab Emirates, Brazil, Iran, France, and Algeria. Isn't that amazing?
It is. It is.
So years ago, I committed to writing those books, and then an offer to do a radio program, and I started that. I'd never done radio before, but I committed myself to the station, and then the podcast came up, and now issues that I find are powerful and necessary for everyone to hear, I'm able to get out to Lithuania and Algeria.
Yeah.
It's really amazing.
But that's how it works. That's really the point that I'm trying to make, and I think Lynn was making, is that you have to take a bold step. We're not talking about little things. We're talking about things that go beyond the self, right, that really have the potential to impact others in a positive way, hopefully, and to have the courage to do that. And you never know what tomorrow is going to hold. So if you're waiting to make sure that things are going to be certain, you'll never take a step. You know, you have to, this is where that faith comes in. And, you know, if we can believe that we all have greater capacity than what we give ourselves credit for having, we could do so much more. But I think what happens is, and this came out when you and I were teaching Creating a Meaningful Life, is that people tend to get in their own way. We become self-governing in the sense that we limit the things that we might really be able to do if we took the governor off. And I'm talking about positive things here. You know, that we might be able to achieve something much greater than we ever thought that we were capable of doing if we just took the chance. And yeah, there's some fear of failure, but if there isn't any risk, then what's the value? Right, we have to get out of that comfort zone and to push ourselves beyond what we think is our capability. And it doesn't have to be ego-driven, heart-driven, gut-driven, because it's necessary, because you see pain and suffering, because you think you can make a difference, even if that difference is feeding one other person. We can do more if we apply ourselves and not be afraid to put ourselves out there. And the thing about putting ourselves out there, Jill, if we fail, just like we teach our infants, get up, brush ourselves off, and go again.
And get going again.
Yes, it is that process that helps us learn, right? We learn from the failures.
You're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM, many voices, one station. Listen globally online from the KSQD.org website. Would you like to be added to our news group and get advance notice of our upcoming interviews and then the podcast link sent directly to you? If so, please text Be Bold America at 22828. Text Be Bold America at 22828. And if you signed up already, we thank you. We're just tickled pink every time we see a new name on the list. We'll be back with our bold guest, Pettus Perry, right after Jim Hightower's commentary titled, How Money is Suffocating Democracy.
America exists today as a bizarre anomaly. We profess to be an electoral democracy, yet we are ruled by a governmental plutocracy. One especially gross example of this incongruity is the overwhelming power of big money over the people's will. By a wide margin, Americans of all political stripes want to ban the distorting force of huge electoral campaign donations by favor-seeking corporations and ultra-rich elites. Yet, nothing. National and state lawmakers take the plutocratic money and promptly bury democratic reforms that would stop the gusher of corrupt cash. An analysis of donations in this year's congressional races shows that this plutocratic perversion of our politics and government has reached absurd levels. Historian Nancy McLean and public interest advocate Frank Clemente have documented that the two main super PACs trying to put Republicans in Congress got about half of their $188 million election fund from just 27 billionaires. Also, a corporate front that backs GOP candidates, Club for Growth, got nearly $35 million from only three billionaires. Thanks to years of congressional stonewalling and the steady partisan stacking of our top courts with corporate ideologues, there is essentially no limits on this purchase of lawmakers. Indeed, the biggest donors are even allowed to undermine democracy in secret, not revealing their identity. Lawmakers elected with this money not only support the billionaire's special interest agenda, which the people don't want, but also are fierce opponents of any reforms to increase voter participation in our governing process, which people do want. This is Jim Hightower saying, that's why, for example, efforts to guarantee every eligible American a constitutional right to vote have not moved forward in Congress, even though the great majority of people favor it. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you lowdowners who subscribe to our monthly newsletter, The Hightower Lowdown. You know who you are. Thank you.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Dr. Pettus Perry because our guest, Lynn Twist, that was confirmed for this interview, just, I'm a little bit worried about her, Pettus, because since it was confirmed just day before yesterday, I'm hoping she didn't have a fender bender or something. But I was going to ask her, and we'll just shift the topic a minute here, because I put this Hightower commentary about money suffocating democracy, because her first book that was a bestseller, Soul of Money, you know, I was going to ask her if she wrote about or had thoughts on the issue about dark money, you know, the non-transparent money is destroying the soul of our democracy. I was very interested to hear her answer on that, because my answer would be yes. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I think any time you're putting your energy into destructive purposes, it's a problem. And it's really what's going on in our society today. We've allowed wealth to basically exclude larger and larger segments of our population from the opportunity to really have meaningful lives themselves, because they're sucking up all of the airtime, all of the space with their own agendas. And so I think it's problematic. I think if you have lots of wealth and you're trying to do good things for the world, I don't have a problem with you being the richest person in the world. But when you're being destructive with that wealth and you're harming people intentionally or not, then I have issues with that. So, yeah, dark money is an issue. Well, I think we've sold our democracy.
Well, she was talking about that we need to take a stand with our money and putting our money into what you were just talking about, positive things, things that help create and build and that doesn't destroy or divide us. And there are multi-billionaires in the world. I was going to also ask her, because she said in her book that we need to embrace the entitled, the wealthy, and the powerful, people who actually need compassion as much as anyone on earth. And I was going to talk to her about that, because I'm probably not working on the same plane, spiritual plane, as she is, but I wanted to give three examples that, and then talk to you about it on the other side, because there are three examples of people that are multi-billionaires that I have. For example, Pete Peterson, who was a multi-billionaire investment banker and had a laser beam focused a crusade against Social Security. And he still does through his organizations. He passed away a few years ago, but his organizations that he funded are still fighting against Social Security. So when he began his crusade, his future and his family's future were set for generations, but he didn't want a smidgen of that for anyone else in the country. And that effort is still going on. Then there's another billionaire, Jeff Green, who made billions in the subprime mortgage market. And he stated that America's lifestyle expectations are too high and needed to be adjusted to have less things and a smaller, better existence. But he flew his wife, children, and two nannies in his private jet to Davos for the World Economic Summit for billionaires. And I have a third example, where Tom Perkins, who's founder of the venture capital firm Klein Perkins, Caulfield and Byers, he said this at a San Francisco Commonwealth Club meeting. There's a war on the 1%, and he compared that war on the 1% to the persecution of America's wealthiest, to the treatment of the Jews in Nazi Germany. So I have a very hard time finding compassion for people like this. You know, what am I missing, Pettis? Or what do you think Lynn would say I'm missing? Because I just can't find compassion for people that say these things and are destructively hurting millions.
Well, I'm not exactly sure what you would say.
I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I kind of do because we don't have Lynn.
Sorry about that. The sense I got from her book is that we have to hold compassion, and we hold compassion because it gives us an opportunity to find positive connections with people who might otherwise be convinced to do things that could suit your cause, if you will. If we don't have compassion for others, we dehumanize them, and we do exactly what they're doing. We come up with these examples. I'm in the 1%, and why you talk about me like talk about Jews or others. One, I find that idea extremely offensive. But, you know, I wish I could remember who it was that was asked what it was. Trump's Treasury Secretary Mnuchin was asked what he thought was the average income for U.S. families. And he said $100,000 a year. Now, he's making decisions based on that assumption, which is erroneous. The man didn't, as the Treasury Secretary, couldn't tell you anything about the average income for Americans. And
by the way, that average income for a family of four is $55,000 for a family of four.
My point exactly.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know. They don't care. They make decisions based on their own view of the world without even considering what people are going through. You know, that's why diversity is so important. It's important for people who do not have resources to speak up. To have all the wealth in the world and to talk about destroying Social Security, which is a lifeline for millions of Americans. And, oh, by the way, that was their money that they put in to Social Security.
And disabled Americans. It's seniors and disabled. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, I mean, that person has the audacity to talk about taking things away from people who need that money to exist. And, like you say, fly themselves in their private jets. That trip probably cost more than, you know, what 1,000 people needed to live for a month. So, I mean, it's ridiculous. And that's the problem with having so much money and the wealthiest among us in the halls of Congress, because it becomes self-serving. People become richer. My mother used to say that if you aren't rich going into government, you'll be rich coming out. And she was right. She was absolutely right. If you look at what happens to people's income who go into Congress.
Well, another thing that she talked about was getting back to living a committed life. Is that living a committed life liberates your life? What I guess what she meant by liberation is that nothing else will pull you off of your purpose or your meaning in life, as we used to teach at the university together. What do you think she meant, that commitment liberates your life?
Well, once you commit to something, it changes how you live. And because the things that begin to manifest in your life start coming to you. I'm getting ready in about 2 weeks to have a major change in my life, because of the commitment I made about 2.5 or 3 months ago now. And that has to do with the contract that is expanding. And it's going to completely change the way I live, well into, if not through, at least 2023, if not beyond, because it is going to then open up other doors, hopefully, because it is a reflection of me living, you know, the right path for myself. It's taken me a long time to get here, but, you know, I think that's really what she's talking about.
You know, I was very fortunate to just get a text from Christine, and she's just said that she's listening to the show, and that her response was that she does believe the people like Pete Peterson and Jeff Green, the multi-billionaires, do deserve compassion, but that they sound very sick and distorted to her. It is an addiction and a mark of somebody who is very empty, who cannot see the needs of others and care about them. I thought that was a really nice text that I just got. So that helps me, too.
I think that's true.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, yeah. It helps me, too, to find some compassion for them, because I see the results of their words and their deeds and the amount of hurt and destruction. And then I have trouble finding that compassion, but that helped me some. So you talked earlier about failure, and she talked about how failure is our friend. Do you have thoughts on that? How failure can
absolutely.
Be our friend? Yeah,
absolutely. And I do agree with the comments you just made as well. If we can't get to, you know, increasing our capacity for compassion with others, we're in really deep trouble because of the tribalism, which is antithetical to having compassion for anybody that's not in the tribe.
Mm-hmm. How failure can be our friend.
Oh, right. You know, we learn more from failure than we do from success, right? And that begins from the moment we're born, when we try to walk and we fall. You know, that could be considered a failure, but it's really training for, you know, getting things right so you have the ability to balance yourself on two feet and move around the house. So, yeah, failure is a friend in that sense. And you have to have the ability to respond to that failure and not see it as such a setback that you don't want to try it again, particularly if it's something that's important to you or that you need, you know, to get done. So, yeah, failure, I'm a firm believer in failure. I can't tell you how many times I failed at something before I got it right. But you know, that's how we grow. That's how we learn.
Right. Join the crowd. I think what we're afraid of, at least I get a pit in my stomach when I know I failed at something or made a serious mistake. And I'm afraid of that physical feeling that I get.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you're so right. It's such a huge learning opportunity.
It is, and that pit in your stomach, and for me, where it comes from is, you know, ridicule that, you know, I had as a kid. You know, people not believing me or people putting me down because I made a mistake or didn't understand something. You know, it's amazing if you think about how we're raising our children, how much we really, I hate to use the term, but spank out of them, or, you know, beat out of them in the sense that, you know, we're constantly putting our kids down when things happen, when life things happen, rather than trying to figure out ways to flip it on the positive. You know, being a hockey dad or being a sports dad, one of the things that they talked about, and I'm glad that the teams did, was the role of parents in, you know, how the children felt about the sport. And, you know, in my case, I allowed my son to lead the way. It was his sport. It was what he wanted to do. But there were parents that were forcing their kids to do it who didn't want anything to do with hockey. So we have to look at our roles as adults and what we're doing to our children, because someday, if they're lucky enough, those children are going to become adults. And they're going to have to make decisions. And we want, I think, to be raising, you know, kids who become much more compassionate, thoughtful human beings.
If you're just joining us, we are actually speaking to Dr. Pettus Perry, and both of us are talking about Lynn Twist's book, Living a Committed Life. We're tap dancing here because Lynn was unable to make the interview. And this is Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7, Many Voices, One Station.
It's the time of year when people give generously to nonprofits. KSQD is a community radio station serving you with broadcasts, podcasts, and events that encourage connection and humanity. We're approaching our fourth anniversary of broadcasting, lifting up the voices of neighbors and highlighting the good things in our local community. We help create a place that celebrates generosity and resilience. For your year-end giving, why not put a present under the tree for KSQD by making your donation today? Go to ksqd.org and click on the Santa Cruz Gives button. Thank you.
We're back, and we're speaking with Dr. Pettus Perry. And Pettus, I'm going to put you on the spot again. One of the things that she talked about in her book was we no longer live in a you or me world. Rather, we are called to live in a you and me world. From my viewpoint, I completely agree. However, from a political viewpoint, it seems that each party views the other as an enemy, and one has become more violent or has become violent over this enemy belief system. There doesn't seem to be any you and me thinking in our governing. Do you have thoughts on this, the you or me versus the you and me world, Pettus?
I talk about it regularly. I call it a we world, that there's room for you and me, but we really have to start talking about we. And I think that's what's missing in the dialogue. I don't hear enough people talking about the collective whole. In a way that really at least makes sense to me. One of the things that Lynn talked about, she was talking about Chick Sempahai, who you and I remember from our days at San Jose State.
Well, we had it as a text.
I love his work on creativity.
Yeah, we had our, it was one of our texts for our Creating a Meaningful Life class, yes.
Yes, and oh, by the way, I've had a thought. I hope when you reach out to check on Lynn, that you suggest to her book, that you get in touch with the people at San Jose State, because I think it would be a great book for that course, and I certainly recommend it to anybody that's interested in this topic. But one of the things that she talked about is life is a process, or at least what I interpreted from her, what she wrote, life is a process of challenges, and it is through those challenges that we grow. So whether that's failure or something else. So I think that we have to keep our eye on the prize. And for me, the prize is growing individually and collectively so that we can create something that serves more people in a way that is compassionate and that serves a better end other than simply wealth. I think wealth, as the end in itself, creates all kinds of issues that people have to circumvent, and I think it with that sort of paradigm, it leads to greed. And greed is something that, from my perspective, and this is mine alone, is destructive.
Well, she also talked in her book, and I saw a lot of the concepts in her book, of Stephen Covey's from the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And she was talking about having known Buckminster Fuller and that he smashed the myth of scarcity. But I think scarcity is really running the world right now. And I wanted to mention when you were talking about it's a we world, is that there's really two mentalities one can live in, scarcity mentality and abundance mentality, because both of those worlds are out there. If you think you live in a scarce world, that is what you're going to see, and that is how you're going to react to it, which I think leads to the me, myself, and I kind of behavior. You know, I'm not getting enough of everything. Somebody else is getting more than me, and that leads to that scarcity, and it, I think, leads to a pretty unhappy life. But there's also an abundance world out there that, abundance, if you approach your life with abundance mentality, then you're going to be living in that world, sort of a yin-yang. You're living in an abundance world, and you see that abundance. So in a more governmental or democracy frame of mind, it's really the commons, understanding what the commons are versus me, myself, and I. You know, and the commons are things that we, you know, come together as a country. And that's what I'm very worried about right now, because it seems that the Supreme Court we have right now is dividing the states, trying to put everything down to the states. And what's happening at the state level is going to make 50 little countries, not one unifying common one. But also we have the commons of education, the commons of our roads and traffic and water and clean air and our sewage system. You know, I want, when I flush that toilet, I don't want to worry about where it goes. I just want it to go, you know, and that's a commons.
That's the case when you want scarcity, right?
Yeah. So I, you know, there's the commons that brings us together that, you know, you can't have your own Dr. Pettus Perry Fire Department. We come together, and that's the abundance of the we, I think, when it comes down to our democracy. But when you have so many people scratching out that they think they have had something taken from them, and start demonizing, say, immigration, it really does, you know, hurt the whole. Any thoughts on scarcity versus abundance mentality?
Well, what she talked about were the three myths, right? There's not enough, more is better, and that's just the way it is. And none of those are true. There really is enough to go around. But powerful people are trying to convince us that we have to fight over everything in the grocery store. Why do you think the shelves are empty? What happened when COVID first hit? You couldn't find a meaningful anything in any store. I was down in San Diego when that happened, and the stores were getting emptied there. And someone just happened to mention to me that I, needed to get to Costco early so I could buy whatever, you know, things I needed. And I flew home, and that very next morning, I was standing in line at 8 o'clock in the morning, even though the store didn't open until 10 o'clock, just to get paper towels and toilet paper because I didn't have any in my house. So, you know, the attitudes we bring to whatever conversation creates real behaviors that cause problems. So because people are telling us that things are scarce, we're fighting each other over the quote-unquote scarce resources. This is all resource struggle. And when people are pulling resources to the top and reducing the amount of resources that everybody else has to deal with, there's going to be a shortage of resources. So they are creating a self-fulfilling prophecy and then making it happen. So you're right. Nature gives us plenty of abundance, but our attitudes and the way we approach life, at least in this country, is trying to convince each other that there's not enough to go around and that everyone is our enemy. And therein lies the problem, because it's not the enemy. We're not enemies of each other. In fact, our strength is coming together to create the things that we all say we want. So we have to change the narrative. We cannot continue to allow people to create a narrative that I would say the majority of the population knows is incorrect. We're being driven by a minority of the population, and that we need to change the narrative.
Well, and I think it's also a choice when you realize that there are two mentalities of scarcity and abundance, you can choose then, and not living reactively, but you can choose then which one you want to live in. And I chose long time ago to want to live in the abundance mentality. It makes a big difference in the happiness of your life. So it's, you know, I wanted to mention something else just quickly about our Creating a Meaningful Life class, because one of the lines Lynn mentioned, wrote in her book, was that living a committed life, that we're looking for it now more than ever. And we were teaching, you know, Creating a Meaningful Life back in 2000.
23 years ago.
Yeah, 23 years ago. Oh, my gosh. Blink.
The world is catching up with us.
I know. Blink.
We're thought leaders, my friend.
Oh, my goodness. But, you know, I was chair of the department at the time, and we had 60 sections filled to capacity. Yep. It was a general education class at the university. And I got a call one day from the provost saying that he was going to cap the number of sections in my department. I go, why? He said, because the other colleges on campus can't fill their GE courses. And I said, well,
I should have told him something.
I know, it doesn't it? And back 23 years ago, we were filling classes on Creating a Meaningful Life. And I think one of the struggles is people don't know how to do this on their own. They look to a class, or they look for a book. And again, Lynn's book is a good one for learning how to create that meaningful life. And
absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. So I just wanted to share that even 23 years ago, it was a class that was so popular that we got in trouble.
Yeah. Well, my first class was 113 students because I taught the only Tuesday, Thursday section. So, and I couldn't tell students no. So you're right. I remember those days. I laugh about them, but we were right then. And you know, every student, at least in the classes I ever seen, everybody should be taking this class.
Exactly.
So I hope that, you know, I really do hope that people will take a look at Lynn's
Lynn Twist. And it's
book,
Lynn, L-Y-N-N-E. Yeah. It's a Lynn with an E and Twist, T-W-I-S-T. Well, Pettis, thank you for stepping in and being my interview guest today. You are our bold and impressive guest.
Oh, thank you, my bold and impressive friend.
Oh, thank you. What's up next on Be Bold America? Well, since our next show is on New Year's Day, we will play a special best of interview we had with psychiatrist and attorney Bryant Welch on his book, State of Confusion, Political Manipulation and the Assault on the American Mind. So if you find yourself on New Year's Day confused about the coming year, don't miss State of Confusion. Remember, Be Bold America is available as a podcast. Now you may listen to the show anytime for free by subscribing through your favorite podcast platform. I want to give a special thank you to Be Bold America's program engineer. She had a tough job today with our interview guests not showing up, and Pettis having trouble connecting to the show. So thank you, Eliza. And I want to thank our program director, Howard Feldstein. You're listening to KSQD Santa Cruz, many voices, one station. Listen worldwide online at ksqd.org. Stay tuned for Reflections on Buddhism with Venerable Tenzin. My name is Jill Cody, and...
You know, I'm Dr. Pettis Perry.
And thank you for listening to Be Bold America. Until next time, keep, stop, start. Until we meet again in the new year, happy holidays and happy new year.